2 days down and seven to go, and there's still no trades. But we do know that Jamie Elliott is staying at Collingwood for at least the next 2 years. Welcome to Trading Day. Welcome to you, Nick Del Santo.
Lovely
on
to
debut.
Be here.
Lee Montagna's back, and John Ralph, you've got the news of the day.
Today's big development, guys, is that Mason Cox has been linked to a trade to the Essendon Football Club should Joe Danaher depart. He's flying back from Texas as we speak. Hasn't ruled out that trade. A lot of water to go under the bridge. Orazio Fantasia will sit down with his new manager, Michael Dowdy, Adelaide-based, tomorrow. We expect he will ask a trade to the Port Adelaide Football Club. And amid all the other potential trades for the Essendon Footy Club, so many balls in the air, they have emerged at the front of the queue for Brisbane wingman Tom Cutler this afternoon.
Well, let's stay with Essendon. Mason Cox, is he a good fit for the Bombers?
Is he a good fit? Not the ideal fit, in my opinion, but I think they will need something to replace the outgoing Joe Danaher. That'll happen eventually. Now, I think they need to go to option B. I don't think Mason Cox is the ideal fit. I'm not sure exactly why he wants out of Collingwood. I believe he's got a year left on a deal. But if he was to go to the Bombers, at least they can replace a like for like simply because of their height and a target going forward. He's not Joe Danaher, can't play like Joe Danaher. But if you're kicking the ball inside the forward line, Joey, at least you've got a big option or a bailout kick.
Yeah, you certainly wouldn't be giving up too much for Mason Cox. I mean, Essendon have got picks 31 and 37. I think probably one of those picks is fair. Josh Bruce is being touted as about a pick 32 at the moment, isn't he? Or a second round pick. That's probably comparative, I think, for Mason Cox. My concern, though, Ralphie, he's 29 in March. And if you look at some of Essendon's key position players, McKernan will be 30 next year. Hooker's turning 31. Brown, Hurley and Bell Chambers are all 30 next year as well. Where are Essendon at, really? I mean, I think it's a disaster losing your two best forwards, Danaher and Fantasia, in the prime of their careers, 26 and 25, if that ends up happening. Replacing them with another 29-year-old, combined with those older players they've already got in their key positions, I'm not sure where it leaves Essendon.
And he's so lightly raced, 58 games of football, and you'd normally say, OK, so he's got five or six really good years ahead of him as he improves. And yet, as you say, this bloke is 29. I think we've not seen the best of him, but we're certainly not going to see a dramatic upside. We've all seen the best stuff he can do, extraordinary preliminary final. But 25 goals 2 years ago, 19 goals in 14 games. So he's a goal-a-game player. He's not a great player.
If I'm Dylan Scheel, or I'm Devon Smith, and maybe Jake Stringer as well, and I've met with Essendon, I've left a football club, and look at Dylan Scheel in particular, a club that's playing finals, right in the hitting zone for competing, right at the pointy end of the year, and then within 12 months they say, oh, well, when you go forward, you can't kick it to an All-Australian quality player in Danaher. But if the ball hits the deck, Orazio Fantasia unfortunately won't be there. I'm disappointed.
Yep.
I've put a lot of investment in my future in the game for the remainder of his career, Dylan Scheel, to go into the footy club. And the two main players in the forward line aren't there.
Yep.
Is he a one-trick pony in that he's fantastic on the lead? There are times where he kicks the ball beautifully, he marks the ball beautifully. But if it gets to ground, he doesn't do much. Does he limit what you can do in a forward line, given the lack of versatility?
Yeah, I mean, you heard Collingwood stick up for him a lot this year, didn't they? That they defend him by saying he just gives us a target to kick to. He doesn't have to mark it. He just has to bring the ball to ground to provide a contest. Now, that's OK, but that's a role player. And then that's maybe what Mason Cox is. And as Dell said, it might just be a replacement for Joe Danaher. But certainly, I don't think those match-winning capabilities we saw really once in a prelim, maybe one or two other times in his career. But he's more of a role player that will fill a need, but certainly I don't think it's going to help Essendon achieve high results up the ladder, which is what they want to do.
Do you believe that Mason Cox and Josh Bruce should have the same value in the draft?
I think Josh Bruce would be a better fit. He's a better player.
We're talking about Josh Bruce, pick 32. That's why we're equating those two. And a question we've been asking quite a bit of you guys and every day during the trade period is, what about Josh Jenkins? Where's he at? And why aren't the Bombers chasing him?
Tom, thank you very much. We've got onto the bloke that they are overlooking, even though he has been in their backyard. Josh Jenkins has been overlooked by so many people out there because of what he can't do. He didn't have a great grand final. You know, people talk about him being a flat track bully or he gets it over the top. You know what he does for you? He kicks you 40 goals a year. You know, he is a two goal a game player for the last six seasons. And even the best players only get to that level. I'll show you some of the stuff he's able to do. 1.3 contested marks a game. Everyone says, oh, looks like Tarzan, plays like Jane. This guy does it on the same level as Josh Kennedy, as Jack Riewoldt, as Jeremy Cameron. So there are slights on his game, and yet if you slot him into that forward line, his pressure in the last couple of years has been right up there. I know it wasn't great in his first couple of years. For the last 5 years, he just kicks you 40 goals a game, and I think he's perfect for them, even though he's slighted on a lot of things he's not perfect at.
So you're talking about contingency plans for Essendon, which clearly they're talking about because they think they might lose Danaher.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's fair enough, but I'll throw this one out. What if Mason Cox does leave and ends up at Essendon? Is Josh Jenkins a good fit for Collingwood? A team that are in the window. I mean, Josh Jenkins, I spoke about Mason Cox being 29. Josh Jenkins is turning 31 in Feb. So I don't know if he's a long-term answer to Essendon's problems. And I don't think Essendon are in the premiership window next season. So maybe is Collingwood a better fit for Josh Jenkins, where he can kick those goals. They play a bit of a different system where they have the small dynamic forwards. Maybe Josh Jenkins could be a good fit at the Pies.
I think he suits Collingwood more than he does Essendon. I love Brodie Mychek. He's the workhorse. He gets up the ground. He's a bit more of the link play. He does all the bulk of the heavy lifting. And you could have someone like a Jenkins, 200 centimetres and 108 kilograms. He's a big man. And we go back to that game where he's isolated one-on-one with Alex Rance, dominated it. So I think he can play that role. And in defence of Josh Jenkins, he gets the one over the top because that's the Adelaide system. He was the last line in the chain and happened to be the last man in the line that would ultimately kick the goal.
What I do know, though, if Collingwood are considering trading Mason Cox, they've clearly got something up their sleeve. They are not getting rid of a player who they think is very important to their structure. Bucks has been on TV saying that. With only Brodie Mychek as their key forward, they must be thinking of something else. They must have something else up their sleeve. I don't know, but you're not considering getting rid of Mason Cox in the premiership window and going into next season with Brodie Mychek and Ben Reid as your two key forwards.
What about DeGoey? What about DeGoey as a more of a...
I still think we've seen in grand finals the last few years, you need your key forwards. They're standing up. Lynch Riewoldt the year before, Kennedy Darling. I think you still need your key forwards.
Preliminary final, albeit a terribly wet day. Two marks from Ben Reid, four disposals. Yeah. Brodie Mychek had two disposals. I know that's not representative of Brodie Mychek in a great year. Josh Jenkins, the ultimate money ball pick. He's going to play for 200 grand plus match payments. We talk about all his money ball
200 grand,
solutions.
Ralphie.
That's what he's prepared to do. He's so desperate to reinvent
No one's himself. Playing for 200 grand anymore.
Dal, he's plus match payments, Dal, which
that's a round of drinks for these players, Ralphie.
Nick, he's happy to play for a lot less than what he's on now. 600,000 he's on this year. He's saying, I'll go anywhere and I'll play for anything. You just give me a chance.
I love the attitude.
Yeah. He's on the record of saying that.
He's not playing for 200 grand. Right. I understand that you'll take a pay cut, but that's
200 grand plus match payments of that's 5 grand a year. If he's at your football club and you're going to say, we're going to play him, of course you're going to. He's going to give you 40 goals and he'll get 600 grand out of the next 2 years and he'll improve your team.
Why can't we embrace the things that he's really good at? Why do we have to harp on the negative and we bring him down and we find one or two, three, four things that they're not very good at? He's good at a few things.
So who would you rather in your forward line? Mason Cox or Josh Jenkins if you're Collingwood going into 2020 trying to win a flag?
Josh Jenkins for me.
Josh Jenkins?
Jenkins.
Jenkins 4-0. Jamie Elliott, scoop of the day, Ralphie.
That's right. He has stayed at the Collingwood Football Club. Unfinished business is the reason why. Now, he's not only given up a 3-year deal, we believe, at the Brisbane Football Club, but also more guaranteed money. He's going to have to play well with incentives to actually earn that filthy lucre. He is football's most loyal player because he's given up free agency last year at Collingwood, signed a 1-year deal. He's done it again. He really believes that after that preliminary final loss that he can make a difference next year. He's off to Airlie Beach, meeting his brother, and then he's off to Europe, and he'll come back with no injuries. Feels like he's got his hamstrings right. Guys, it's a really great decision for Collingwood. It's amazing for all the players we just criticised, like Josh Jenkins. Players are mostly loyal.
Love this story because we always talk about the players that are leaving and people think there's less loyalty in football. Really, there's never been more opportunity to leave a club than there is now, and a lot of players stay. So I think it's a great story for Jamie Elliott. I think it's a great credit to Nathan Buckley and the culture that he's put into that football club, that they want to stay. They're close to success. I really like it, and good luck to both him. And he'll get his third year and a fourth and a fifth year, hopefully, if his body holds up because he's a talented player. He's important to them. So if he just gets a good run at it, he'll make that money up at Collingwood down the track.
And Collingwood could only offer him incentives as well, unlike Brisbane and Melbourne, which were offering him guaranteed money, which leads us to Collingwood's list management decisions over the next 12 months, and they're very important ones, Ralphie.
Who would be a list manager for Quids? So Ned Guy has just got that deal done, just warded off Brisbane, and now he's got massive names. Brodie Grundy, who wants a 7-year deal, Darcy Moore, who's already considering what a contract looks like, and Jordan DeGoey. I understand that he's very likely to park his talks until right at the end of the 2020 season. He believes that he's worth $1 million a year. Now, potentially, it might be 800 plus. The problem that Collingwood's going to have is that all of these various player managers want to know what the other player is doing. So if Brodie Grundy walks out on Collingwood in round 20 next year, well, Jordan DeGoey wants to be available to say, I want some of that cash. And so what I think Collingwood should do is pay Brodie Grundy now. There is certainty there. That means potentially the likes of Jordan can get their cash or will know exactly what the cash is. But we know Collingwood won't offer that 7-year deal.
Do you have any understanding of what DeGoey and Moore may be asking for in regards to length of contract post next year?
Yeah, I think what they're happy to do at Collingwood is offer 5-year contracts. And so I don't know, maybe if Jordan Ngoe comes out and kicks the 60 he's capable of, he gets $900,000 over the next 5 years, and I think we all feel that's about right.
But from a list management perspective, can you offer 5+ years for Grundy, Moore and Ngoe in the one go?
Well, I think that's why Collingwood have a right not to give Brody Grundy 7 years, because then what stops Darcy Moore or Jordan Ngoe putting their hand up and saying, well, I want 7 years as well? So I think that's probably the issue at the moment. I agree. Brody Grundy, you can't replace him. He's a star. But they've got others they've still got to pay, and then there's a precedent there. So it's very precarious. Remember, they've just signed Adam Treloar and Taylor Adams as well, which would be pretty handy deals. Scott Pendlebury comes out of contract as well, and he's still going to be on good money. I mean, he's still one of the elite players in the competition,
well,
All-Australian and second in the best and fairest, Del. Yeah. And Tom Langdon also. So, yeah, tough situation for Collingwood. They're going to be very careful how they work through this, because they don't want to lose any of those players, particularly while they're still tracing this elusive flag.
Orazio Fantasia is on the move, we think, certainly to Adelaide, probably to Port Adelaide, Ralphie, but Michael Doughty is his new manager, and the key here is that he's Adelaide-based. All the signs are pointing towards a fight over there, isn't it?
So TLA have got 16 managers across the country. Of course, they merged with Stride. They've got 8 or 9 of them in Melbourne. He didn't decide to go with any of those. He went, of course, with Michael Doughty. So he's having knee surgery this afternoon. We know he's already had hip surgery. He'll sit down with Michael. Port Adelaide expected he'll ask for a trade. They feel like if Joe Danaher is asking for a trade, you know, a significant one, he might as well just float in there and get that done. So, look, I think they feel that it's somewhere between their pick 10 and pick 29. What we do know is that Dougal Howard is prepared to be part of an Essendon trade. And so, look, I feel like that would be a win-win, whether it's 29 and Dougal Howard, if you get rid of Fantasia. Guys, what do you think of that deal?
I'm not sure about the Dougal Howard move, but I think Essendon need an established player, someone that is ready to play football right now. Now, if there's a draft pick along the way, that's a bonus. They are, in my opinion, their list and where they've been in the last year or so. They're ready to strike. Now, it doesn't mean ultimately they'll win the premiership, Joey, but they think they're around the mark. Yep. So if I'm Essendon, thank you very much for a draft pick, but I want an established player. I want someone that's ready to play round one and play consistent football.
Yeah, I agree. The names we just mentioned before and their age, I mean, they still think, well, Hooker and Hurley are part of their defence. Mm-hmm. Bell Chambers, you know, late in his career, this is their time to strike. So I probably agree with Dale. If I was an Essendon supporter, I'd like to be getting a good senior player that's going to add to the side next year.
Do you rate Sam Powell-Pepper, who does not kick the ball well, but is a fierce inside warrior?
I do. I think Essendon need a big-bodied mid. We spoke about it last week. They need to help because Dylan Shield, Zach Merritt, McGrath, Zaharakis are so much better if they've got someone around them
Heppel.
That can do the heavy lifting. Dyson Heppel tries. He's hard out. So I think they do need a big-bodied mid. Yep.
Well, is Powell-Pepper still a chance to leave?
I think he'd like to stay. I think right now they're saying he's a required player.
Yeah.
But if the only way they could get Orazio Fantasia would be to move him on, I think that's possible.
We've seen that with Ryan Burton, didn't we? I mean, he wasn't on the radar. But if Hawks wanted Wingard, you've got to give up something. And maybe Port Adelaide have to give up something to get Fantasia.
Has Powell Pepper's name been brought in this because Ollie Wine's name had been brought up as the big body mid? They said, well, you're not taking the captain.
Yeah.
You can have the guy that just sits underneath him, and that is Powell Pepper.
Well, publicly they were saying, we don't want Sam Powell Pepper to go anywhere. Privately they were saying, be interesting to see what we'd get from him.
Yeah. That's a very interesting situation, the way it's going to play out at Port Adelaide, as is the Melbourne and Fremantle trade discussions relating to Ed Langdon. I understand this is all being done in good faith. It's going to get done at some stage, but it's what it's going to get done for and maybe how it's going to impact other trades in this period. Brad Hill, for one, as well, and Angus Brayshaw's name continues to be mentioned, whether that's right or wrong. Ed Langdon to Melbourne, a good trade?
Yes, I like
Adam Tomlinson to Melbourne, a good pickup.
A good pickup played the right way.
Okay, so then the question I have for you then, Joey, is they're reshaping their midfield or their wings. Is that justified given the season we've just seen from the Demons?
Well, I think they've identified they need to play with some more width. And then we see the good teams now. We don't want to get too technical, but your wings play an important role in how you set your ground position up. We know they all hunt the ball, the midfield, the Melbourne midfield. So now they get the chance, don't they, Dal, to keep Ed Langdon and Tomlinson. And Adam Tomlinson, I know we sort of, both Dal and I have spoken about, he only averages 17 disposals at GWS, but he played a role. He plays on that off-ball wing. So the outer side of the ground to allow Whitfield and Kelly, these other ball winners, to get the footy. He might do the same at Melbourne. Play the off-ball. He can drift behind the footy and help shore up their defence because of his ability to play as a defender. He can push forward and kick goals. And Ed Langdon can run up and down the wing and do what he did so well.
If you're Adam Tomlinson, though, and you're going to play that same role that you've just played at the Giants, and we call it the offside or the off-ball winger, and you allow the better inside midfielder, a Josh Kelly or something, Whitfield, to play the predominant where the ball is on that side of the wing, isn't that exactly what he's just been doing for the previous 4 or 5 years?
That's his role.
I think he's been happy enough to do that. I know there's been speculation around that, oh, he had to keep swapping onto the wing that Lachie Whitfield is. GWS said he knew his role. Tell me the one game that Adam Tomlinson has played that stands out to you. That was the game.
Yeah. Was it the prelim?
Nah, he tagged Nick Riewoldt one day and did a really good job on Rui.
I can't think of it. Hasn't earned a Brownlow medal vote. Yep. And you need players like that in your team as role players. But are they $500,000 players?
That was the question. That's what I said the other night. It was strange to be paying what I consider big money to get a role player into your club.
It's more than $500,000.
But maybe is it really? Yeah. Well, maybe Melbourne, if I thought, well, we need to get this player in for our shape, for the way we want to set up next year and the style of footy we want to play. We want to play more like the good teams in the competition, a bit more open, and Tomlinson fills that need. But, you know, yeah, you're paying a lot of money for a role player.
I'd love to see someone of his height, his running ability to get more than 17 disposals per game.
Yeah, okay.
That number has to be a minimum 24. If you're around the football, even if you are on the off ball side, you got to get your hands on the footy.
As you look at Ed Langdon, you know, around 22 this year, 861 metres gained, 37 possessions. He kicked the ball at 60% this year. And I know a lot of people criticise his kicking. I think you can see the upside in Ed Langdon. I'm not sure he can see it in Tomlinson.
And what are you hearing about Angus Brayshaw? We mentioned it briefly before. He's a contracted player at Melbourne, but it just seems like Freo potentially could still be keen for him if the right deal comes up, but it might be a long way away.
Well, on the way into the trade period yesterday, Peter Bell said, oh, we think he's a very good player. On the way out, he said, because of that speculation, we've shut it down. We've said to Melbourne, we're not interested at all. I think they'd absolutely be interested in him if he was gettable. But I think Angus is very steadfast that he's playing at Melbourne next year.
Yeah. The hard word.
The hard word.
Take it away.
Here it comes. Well, it's off the back of Stephen Wells, the list manager at Geelong yesterday. And been so much conversation about Tim Kelly and what he is actually worth. Now, we speak about precedents, Joey. Yep. And in the last few years, there's been about five trades that have involved two first-round picks. Now, Tim Kelly, I think, and we all agree, is in that conversation. But now there's conversation around he's worth more than that. Is it three first-round picks? I'm not sure. I think every now and then we just need to take a deep breath, assess the player for exactly what they are, and take away Brownlow votes, best and fairest finishes, all Australians, and actually assess the player on what we currently see. Remove their resume. Assess him on who they are and the way that they play football. Three's getting out of control, in my opinion. That is a huge price.
Three first-round picks is out of control.
However they spread it. If you want to do two this year and one as a future or somewhere in between, it's a lot. That is a lot.
So is he better than these players? So these are the five players you said that were two first-round draft picks, but the clubs all got something back in the second or third round.
So it technically wasn't
two. So it wasn't two first-round. It was basically one first-rounder, and then you basically slide back in the draft for your next pick.
Let's
so we're talking Lachie Neal, Dylan Shield.
Is he better than Lachie Neal?
Dylan Shield.
Comparative last year.
Dane Beams, Jake Lever and Bryce Gibbs. They're the last five that clubs their clubs gave up two first-rounders and then, well, one first-rounder and slid back in the draft. So Tim Kelly, I think, is better than all five of those players. So he's getting close to being worth two first-round draft picks.
He's better than Lever and Gibbs, no doubt.
But we're talking about three
Shield,
first-round
Beams,
draft picks.
Well, now we're talking three.
Yeah, that's too many. That's
what Stephen Wells wants.
That's just called posturing.
So you can always ask. Doesn't mean you're going to get it, though, Tom.
That's posturing, but how do you work around that then? How do you get the deal done? If Stephen Wells is out of it.
It's like any negotiation. You start high, the other clubs start low, and you meet somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So that's why I think around two first-round draft picks is probably right for Tim Kelly.
And the one thing he hasn't been able to do well is beat the tag. And that's why Patrick Dangerfield, Gary Ablett, Chris Judd, all those blokes were worth that much because they were megastars. So maybe at West Coast, that's why he's going there. He doesn't have to get
Ralphie.
Tagged.
Ralphie. Well, no one gets tagged anymore, Ralphie. He's going to play the rest of his career running around for free for 2 hours on the weekend.
Unless
it's a beautiful life.
But that is important. We have seen that in the past. Players that are the third or fourth best midfielder at one club go to another club and all of a sudden cop more attention and they struggle. He's going to be lucky enough to go to West Coast Eagles. He's still going to be behind Shuey, Yo, Sheed, Gaff, etc. So, yeah, it's a big call.
We'll wait and see how it plays out for Freo. Of course, they might still be able to get Tim Kelly as well, but Joey will talk to you about that after the break, as well as Alex Keith and also Brad Hill. What's going to go on with him? Stay with us on Trading Day. Welcome back to Trading Day. Lee Montagna, I've got to say, we had Ben Dixon in that seat last night and he completely disagreed with you about Tom Papley. So I want to get your thoughts on your Papley reasoning very soon from last week, because Dicko wasn't a fan and Kingy supported Dicko, of course.
We'll save it.
But let's talk about Alex Keith, first of all, and what his value is. My understanding is that the Adelaide Crows actually revised their offer late in the season, which is far less than what they offered mid-season, and they still want a first-round pick for the Dogs, who, of course, don't want to give it up. What's his worth, Dal?
He's not worth pick 13.
No, is he worth the next one? Is he worth
32? More realistic. This is Alex Keith, who's played 30 games, only been in the competition for a couple of years. Just getting ankle surgery last week, be out for 20-odd weeks. 32, I still think's just bordering on maybe where... I wouldn't be surprised if it was just purely on what a draft pick would be worth, maybe a touch higher even.
Yeah, look, I think that it depends on how badly you want him. And I think the Western Bulldogs are right in the hitting zone. If they can land Alex Keith and Josh Bruce I'd have them in the top four next year. I think they can push for a premiership. We know about their star-starter midfield. I think they're ready to go. So they've just got to find a way to get it done. Now, I'll probably agree with Dale. 13 might be a touch high. If they
touch
want,
high?
Yeah, it is. It is a touch
high. That's a lot high.
Look, 32, those too low.
But is 32 going for Josh Bruce? That's the...
Exactly right. So they've somehow got to manipulate these. I think they've got to manipulate the 13 and 32 to get two picks that are somewhere in between that and just get their men. I think just get Alex Keith, get Josh Bruce, lock them away, and I think they're cherry ripe to have a crack at another
premiership. I agree with Joey on the part that if you have to pay a tiny bit over and you are where the Western Bulldogs are and you've come home like a house on fire and ultimately lose the first game against the GWS Giants in finals, if you have to pay a tiny bit over to get a centre-half forward and a centre-half back, then pay a little bit over. I don't think Bulldogs fans would be disappointed at all knowing that, hey, we're going for it again.
Are you guys as bullish as we are on the Western Bulldogs?
Yeah, absolutely.
You bring these two blokes in.
Yeah. I think they can win a premiership next year.
Yep. I think I was first to say it, Ralphie, actually.
Very
nice.
He's been hanging out with Sam McClure too long.
Moneyball call, Joey.
Yeah, well, we talk about Moneyball, trying to find some players that might be not quite happy at their clubs, might have run their race, might be disgruntled, that you can lure out and make a big difference to your footy team. And I'm thinking of someone that you've played with, Dale, Mason Wood. There's been a lot of talk throughout the season about Mason Wood. He's been at the Kangaroos for 6 years, played only 57 games. We know he's been played as a forward, hasn't quite lived up to expectations. Does another club take him and say, let's turn him into an intercept defender, an elite intercept defender, like a lot of other forwards have gone and done? Think of Jeremy Howe, think of James Sicily, even Liam Jones. Failed forwards that couldn't quite get it done, but because of their athleticism, their talent, they can actually become an elite intercept defender. And we know that they are becoming such an important player. You look at Nick Haynes at the Giants, Dell.
Yep.
What do you think about a club? Because he's out of contract next year. Does a club make a play? It might only cost him a second or third round pick, and you get someone as highly talented as Mason Wood to your football club.
Well, I think there have been some whispers about possibly going to Fremantle or a football club like that. I think that's a great example of where you can change a player. He's got superb hands.
So what hasn't he made it?
He's played 0% forward in his career.
Defence. 0%.
He's never played.
Hasn't been down there.
Yeah. But, I mean,
Why hasn't he made it?
A couple of reasons. There's so many reasons why players haven't fulfilled their potential. I think I'd still pay him and pick him up on potential. He's been there for 7 years, only played 57-odd games. He's a great height, an amazing runner, reads the ball relatively well and got good hands above his head. His body has been an issue, Ralphie. I mean, the simple answer is, and when I was there playing with him, his body was never consistent. He'd get through a part of the pre-season, break down, and then the same thing would happen throughout the season. I think it's a great example, Joey. If you want to take a little bit of a risk on a player, feel like there's a better position for him, great example.
And a fresh start. Yep. You can see what it's done to other players. Yep. It just might be one that could make a significant difference to your team, particularly those challenging. Maybe an Adelaide Crows. They're going to lose Keith. Andy Otten's retired. Yep. Tom Duday coming back from a knee. Maybe a club like that who are going to have some draft picks. They take a bit of a risk on Mason Wood, turn him into an elite intercept defender.
Brad Hill, are we going to see him in a Saints jumper over the next few days parading around Moorabbin?
We certainly will. It is extraordinary money, however you cut it. So, five-year deal at about $900,000. So, they're going to have to give up most of pick six. I think they realise that. Maybe you get something back for him. He's the exact kind of player they want. They want elite speed. They want someone that can get up and down the wing at Marvel Stadium. The only thing that confuses me is that all of a sudden they're saying, well, people are saying they haven't got any cash anymore. So Josh Bruce is sort of forced out so they can get cash in. Dan Hannabury's on $800,000. We were told they'd banked all this salary cap space for years and years and years. And now they're trying to move players out. That's a bit confusing.
Jack Stephen possibly leaving, which will free up some space. David Armitage has finished up. He's retired, so there'll be a fair bit of cash
left. We've forgotten about Dylan Robertson and Paddy McCartan, who haven't played. Now, they're not on $1 million, but they're probably on $1 million between them, and they haven't played, and that must hurt, Joey.
Well, injuries always hurt your salary cap. That's the one thing that's forgotten about. Because you pay these players a set contract, if they don't play, you've still got to pay them the amount of money, and you're paying match payments to play the younger players in this side. So that might have affected them. But I don't have a problem with paying Brad Hill $900,000, because if I'm a Saints fan, pay whatever you need to pay to get him to the club. If you had offered $700,000, he might not have chosen St Kilda.
Spot on.
So if you want the house, pay top dollar and buy the house. That's what you do. I'm happy they've got the, even if they are paying top dollar for a wingman.
And at least you know what you're getting with Brad Hill. Yeah. You know exactly what you're buying in an investment going forward. You get 5 years out of him. He runs as good as anyone does in the game.
Yep.
He's proven it on the big stage. I think it's a fantastic pickup. Do you think he's worth pick six, though?
Oh, minimum. I think more than that.
Really?
Do you think Brad Hill's...
If we're talking top, I'm getting a Tom Papley pick nine, Brad Hill's a much better player than Tom Papley.
Well, I don't know if Tom Papley's worth pick nine.
Okay, yeah.
As a starting point.
See, I've got you guys on the same page.
This is getting out of control, this first... Everyone's worth a first-round draft pick, Tom.
Yeah.
There'll be no first-round draft picks left.
So if King is sitting right there, would you say the same thing?
Of course I would.
Yeah, okay. And Dicko?
Dicko maybe what not so much, he gets physical.
I think for Carlton, he's absolutely worth it. But the only cautionary tale, Aaron Norton was pick 9 a couple of years back. Yeah. So it is a lot to give, but if you're Carlton and that's the only positional type you need, you just go and get him.
Yeah, I think Brad Hill, a 6 is a minimum. I think he's worth more than that, considering some of the other players and what they've been spoken about.
Precedence.
Precedence. But you're right, under the roof at Marvel Stadium, for him on one wing, Jack Billings on the other.
Kicking the ball to Josh Brew. Oh, no, they just got rid of
that. That's right, they've got a young bloke called Max King, I think, coming through. Might be okay.
The Sydney Swans, they re-signed 5 players today. Daniel Menzel was not one of them. Do we think that Joe Danaher is going to seriously affect whether Menzel gets a contract next year?
Well, he's certainly in limbo. He's certainly waiting for a contract. I think people are close to him are saying it's not about Joe Danaher. I think, how can it bother him? What's your understanding on...
Yeah, well, he wants to play on. He's a free agent, so he could be picked up for free. But I think there's a fair bit of frustration from the Menzel camp that he hasn't been offered a contract yet.
I can't really argue with it. I mean, he came on a one-year deal to the Swans. He wasn't really in their best 22 for the majority of the year.
7 games, 7 goals.
Yeah, I don't think he's in their best team. So I'm not surprised that he's not getting offered a contract.
He's waiting at the moment. They still might offer a contract.
Yeah, because what they do with a lot of players that are in limbo like that, they say to them, look, we don't know if there's going to be a spot on the list for you. We've got to get through trade period. If you're happy to sit and wait till after trade period, we'll be able to tell you whether there's a spot for you or unfortunately not. There are a lot of players that have been in similar situations right now, waiting to see what happens at trade period.
And that forward line's pretty appetising, isn't it? With Franklin and Blakey and also, well, if Menzel stays, but also Joe Danaher. Yeah, McCartan.
I think Tom McCartan will have to go and play centre-half back. I think McCartan and Sam Reid can maybe play as defenders around Alir and Rampy. And what about their forward line? Ooh, Danaher, yeah. Buddy, Blakey.
What's the first trade tomorrow, Ralphie?
I said it was John Patton. I'm going to say Ed Langdon to the Demons for pick 22.
And we'll wait for John Patton and we'll wait to see you guys tomorrow night and all of you as well on trading day. Same time, same place.
This has been a Fox Sports production.